So I was just mentioning that when I prepared for this talk, I got to hear the same words that I've heard before, just differently. You know, I had one of those moments where, you know, maybe there was enough wonder or curiosity or openness, or maybe it was just the right moment. I'd had a cup of coffee, maybe that helped. And it felt really inspiring. And the stories that, so I was particularly inspired by Ajahn Suchito's writings. And, you know, he has this book that is in the link, you know, we have a set of links for resources for this year's topic on the Paramis. And, you know, he has a book. It's available free as a PDF. And that book to me is just fantastic. And this chapter struck me more than even normal. The stories he told and the complexity and nuance of his stories of resolve and what they say. And so I'm going to lean heavily on his stories and his teaching for this talk. So before we even do that, I wanted to say, you know, to orient us to this topic of resolve, right? One way I think of it is, you know, we hear a lot of wisdom. We come to, you know, we're all people who we're all sitting for these Sunday talks. We're all people who probably are reading and listening to lots of Dhamma. And so I have one thought, you know, for me, it's free, really here, really easy to get inspired by all the ideas that come up and, you know, to noodle on them for a while. But very often what'll happen is I'll do that for a while and then I'll just totally forget them. You know, that we hear these inspirational things and then we go about our way. And sometimes they sink in a little bit, but, you know, sometimes they often get lost or there's more I could have done with them. And so one way of thinking about resolve is that resolve or resolution answers the question, what am I supposed to do with all this? You know? And you might have felt that at some point where, you know, it's great to hear about, you know, letting go. It's great to hear about equanimity, about just watching everything. You know, we sit in this meditation practice and we pay attention. And sometimes insights arise spontaneously, but sometimes we're like, okay, I sat, I saw, what do I do? You know, we can feel that call to action without knowing what to do next. And resolve and thinking intentionally about resolution is one answer to that question, so as an exercise, for just a moment, I'm going to ring a bell again, and I'm going to ask you to call to mind a resolution. And I'll give a little guidance of that. So this is just a short exercise. If you close your eyes again, invitation is to call to mind a resolution that you have at some point undertaken. This can be something current, it can be something in the past that you are no longer undertaking. It should be something you chose to do, as opposed to a situation that was forced upon you, or that just sort of arose. Some examples that came up for me are deciding to treat others in a certain way, deciding to raise a child in a certain way, or care for a pet in a certain way, or treat your relatives or care for your relatives in a certain way. Could be finishing school or completing a course. Could be meditating regularly or attending sanghas, becoming a part of a sangha. Bring one to mind. And a moment, to consider the question, what motivated you? Whether you did it completely consciously or not, what was the motivation? Why did you do it? So I'll just go over some things that come up in the texts and in the works of people more modern about why we might create resolutions. We often create a resolution to give energy to some goal that we believe in, right? And in doing that, I want to note that in doing that, it's a little different from saying, I'm not saying this is something I must absolutely achieve. It's about giving energy to the goal, right? Sylvia Boorstein writes that whenever she sits, or often when she sits, she creates the resolution, I'm not getting up until I'm enlightened. Right? And we all laugh at that because, probably we're not going to be enlightened by the time we sit up. And she probably has that same recognition in herself. So this is less of an ultimatum, this resolution, as it is giving energy to a goal, right? In her case, she's putting energy to something that she believes in. And you can imagine sitting and sitting with after saying that, I'm not getting up until I'm enlightened. Right? Of course, this is a reminder of what the Buddha did and actually did get enlightened from. But part of this is it creates a certain resolve in our sit, right? It can give, I want to point out that it can work with our natural tendencies. I am a person who I give up easily, and I often lose learning as a result. If I don't set a resolve to meditate for 20 minutes when I'm sitting on my own, especially, right? It's easy for me to sort of convince myself that after 12 it's good enough, or after 15 it's good enough. And if I've decided to sit for 40, I can be like, okay, I've kind of gotten out of this what I need at 30, right? And often I'm losing something as a result, because often the point at which I'm quitting is a point of tension. It's a point of where something has come to me that's drawing me out of the meditation. And that's often the most right place to work. Right? Oh, what if I sat when I don't want to sit? What if I sat when I'm being called to write something down or go do the next thing? What if I sat when I convinced myself that I was done, I didn't really need any more? What happens next if I do that? Right? There's often something really valuable there. Another thing is, aside from giving energy to a goal, resolution can give clarity to a goal. Right? We're taking one thing off of the table. We're not constantly litigating whether or not to do a thing. Right? We've just decided we're going to do this. And if we commit to that, then that's just one less thing in our way. Right? It can feel like a relief or a relaxing sense to just be done with that. Okay, I'm doing it. That's all there is to it. Now I can get into the business of doing it. Right? It can feel easier. The thing I want to talk most about today, though, is a specific thing that I was inspired by when reading Ajahn Sucitta, which is the way in which setting resolutions can be a way to work with challenging mind states and to cultivate wisdom around them. So things that might come to mind are, well, we talked about sitting in meditation for 20 minutes, right? Or 30 minutes or whatever it is. If we've committed to that stillness for that length of time, we get to see all the challenges that come up in our way, right? Because we've set this resolution, because we've said, no, we're going to do this, we're going to sit for the amount of time we claim to, we get to see all the ways in which our mind wrestles with that, ways in which we rebel, the why, the doubt, the this is good enough, all of that, right? If you've ever completed a physical challenge, like a race, or maybe a daily step count, or maybe you've resolved to, to do something. Some people will try to get some kind of stretching in or weightlifting or something like that. If you've ever committed to that and done it, you'll see the ways in which you rebel, right? I remember once many years ago, I committed to running as a way of dealing with the dark and the cold. This wasn't in Seattle. I'd moved from the East Coast to Vancouver, BC at that time. And so I was confronted with something that's very familiar to all of us in Seattle, which is that winters can be dark, right? And they can be a little damp. And the first winter, I was really struggling with that. It wasn't a feeling of depression as well, maybe, I don't know what it was. I was feeling very tired, And it really was sapping my energy, and I couldn't really get anything done. And I resolved that every day at a certain time, I was going to jog. And I resolved that it would be for a certain amount of time. And it wasn't something especially grueling in terms of what I was asking myself to do physically, but boy, was it hard to put on running clothes and get out, especially as it was darker and darker at that time of day. And rainy and cold, and I just didn't want to, And I got to see all the mind states that come up, all the ways that I tried to escape, all the things I would tell myself, And it just kind of illustrates something that I think we can all relate to, which is that when you commit to something and you're going to do it anyway, you get to really see the patterns and you get to see where there's stillness if you stick around, right? This practice, this kind of, if we've resolved to a meditation practice, it really takes moving through all the waves of drama in our minds, all the emotional content, all the thinking content, to recognize that it all arises and passes, to really experience the impermanence of those things. We have to stick through it. And then we get to see the stillness, we get to see the moments. That, oh, it's all done. That whole wave of drama is over. And I'm still here. I'm still watching. There's still this breath. There's still this body, right? We get to notice those things relatively less permanent, relatively more permanent, relatively more still. One thing that Suchito talks about is how this can help develop compassion. And so there's a story of his that I want to paraphrase. He talks about a time, so when Ajahn Suchito was, well, he's a monastic, and he mentioned that in his practice, there are 3 months of the year that are taken for a particularly intense practice, right? And at the beginning of those 3 months, you're asked to set a resolve. You're asked to create a resolution or several for those 3 months. And so he went into his wisdom and decided that the resolves he would take once were to spend 3 months not reading and not lying down. And so the not reading came from the fact that he recognized that he was someone who really liked to be inspired by things he read. He really liked his mind to be bright and alert and to be stimulated. So in moments during the day when he had nothing else to do, he would read, and he would read things that felt inspiring. Doesn't sound like a bad habit, right? But he noticed that he was using it to fill time. And he was resolving not to read, to inquire into what would happen. What would he do with those stretches of time where he wasn't allowed to read? What would happen? The not lying down. This meant that at night, he would adopt a sitting posture and he would not allow his body to completely rest in the same way. So he found himself in those 3 months with two things going on. One, these yawning stretches of time where he couldn't read, and he was also in noble silence. So you can imagine that they just felt, your mind struggles against that. You can imagine this feeling. And also that his mind became really dull because he wasn't sleeping. And I relate to that in particular because that's a very hard state for me. The state, I find it very difficult. If I'm meditating before sleep or when I'm really tired, I often give up because I'm like, well, I'm just tired right now. I'm just drifting off into dream states and I'm nodding off. I'm just going to not do this. And so to hear that he sat for 3 months with that dullness of mind, and he talked about, the kind of daydreaming, the weird daydreaming that can occur when your mind is in that state and you're trying to meditate. And he sat with that and he cultivated an observation of that mind state. And what he said at the end was that it helped him develop compassion for that mind. Compassion for himself in that state. And that really felt radical to me. What if I stayed in those moments when I'm feeling just too drowsy and I give up? What would I learn? Instead of deciding this is a non-meditative state, I'm just daydreaming. What if I could observe that state and just be okay with it? So that's an example. I thought it was a really enlightening example of a resolve you can take out of wisdom to see, to explore an edge, to explore something that would be difficult, right? And what resulted from it was compassion. Another story he told that, and I'll tell this story, and I think after this, I'll skip a little content so that we'll have a little time for I'll tell this one story. I'll go into a couple of tips or general ideas that came up, and I'll try and end this by about 11:18, so that we'll have a little time to talk before I go into announcements. The second story that I wanted to mention is that Ajahn Suchito found himself in the role of being very busy with work for the monastery. And, he felt like he had cultivated a need to be doing important things. And he was becoming identified with his work. And first of all, have you ever experienced this? Is this kind of a relatable thing to any of you? I feel it very much. And when I'm busy, I get into a certain huffy state about being busy. If I see people who are relatively, leisurely, I think, well, I'm busy. I can't do those things, as though there's something really important I'm doing when I'm busy with that time. I remember I used to have a job that I had this notion about the job. It's not my current job, but I felt that I was doing important things in that job. And it kind of created this wall of judgment to anyone who was not doing something that I felt was, equally important. But this can be anything that makes us feel self-righteous, right? We can all relate to these things, right? Or many of us can. And so I'm going to read the story that Ajahn Suchito told, because I think he does it justice in a way I couldn't if I paraphrased. So he's referring to this job he had at the monastery. He says, I'd sit in meditation and just think about the work I was doing, planning the work I had to do, figuring out this and that. And I wondered how to freshen up. And so I decided to resolve occupying this busy mind with something meaningless, but devotional, just to give myself, with no result and no one noticing. We have a memorial stupa in the monastery. And so every morning, I'd get up at about 3:30 a.m. and go to the stupa to circumambulate it and bow to each of its four shrines. So this was the thing he decided to do, meaningless but devotional. I decided to do that every day during one rains retreat, no matter what. So as soon as I woke up, before I could even think about it, I'd get up, get dressed, and go. This might sound like a good idea in July, but in Britain, And in late October, rain and cold and dark, inner muttering and lethargy. But whatever was in the mind at the time, I would put that mind state on one of the shrines on the stupa and bow to it, bow to the mind state. I'd think, "Very good, I honor you." Then the mind would say, "What's the point of doing this?" And I'd reply, "I bow to you, I honor you." On another day, the mind would say, "This is pointless." And I'd focus on that mind state and bow to it. I developed a sense of opening to and supporting the mind rather than trying to pull it into shape or make it have lovely thoughts. After a while, the mind would say, "I understand what you're doing. I've got the point now, so you can relax." And I'd think, "I bow to that mind state. I honor, love, and respect you." And then the mind state would say, "But it's raining this morning." So I'd bow to that. The mind would say, "What are you trying to prove anyway? Who do you think you are?" And I'd respond by bowing and honoring that thought. Crazy? A little. But it got me to see through the compulsive and insatiable nature of needing to be doing important things. That habit was getting me stuck on goodness and putting myself in the repair shop to try and make samsara work. And with this, I wasn't attuning, and with this, I wasn't attuning to the invaluable lightness and joy that makes it possible to live in and see through the world at the same time. This is where, when duty stales us, wise devotion can further us. Right? So this is deep to me. This is a story of him coming up with an entirely pointless task because he's gotten fixated on doing important things and seeing how the mind works with that and coming out on the other side with an attuning to the invaluable lightness and joy that makes it possible to both live in and see through the world at the same time. Quote him, right? We often don't know where it's going to lead, I think, to stick with the resolve like this, right? Did he know he was going to come out of compassion with the first resolve? Did he knew he was going to see lightness and joy at the end of this one? I don't know. I certainly don't think I would have been able to see that that's where I'd end up. And maybe part of it is that we have an intuition when we set a wise resolve that, hey, this is a place I'm stuck, but we don't know where we're going to end up. Right? And we can only know if we really stick with it till the end. When we ignore those voices that say, "Okay, I understand what you're doing. I've got the point now. So you can relax. You can stop doing this." Right? It's only when we get to that point that when we go beyond those points that we can do this. Okay. So some things I take from this in general, I think is a good tip with resolve. If this sounds like a good idea, then a tip is to set the resolve carefully from a place of wisdom, right? If we're going to take this seriously, we want to have the best chance of this being a good idea, right? Do this in a state when you feel clarity about your situation and about what's needed in your life right now. Some questions to ask. Where do you have unhealthy attachments? Where do you feel called to grow? Right? When you feel like there's some moments when we feel like we're caught, and there are other moments where we feel like we're clear on what's going on in our lives. When you feel clarity, and you can ask questions like that and come up with answers, that may be a moment to set a resolve. Another note is that we can set resolves one step at a time. Especially when they're big or intimidating, right? Suchito describes this as when he entered his monastic life. He didn't know if he had been asked to commit to this path at that moment, that felt overwhelming to him. So he just said, "Okay, today I'm going to stay at the monastery. Today I'm going to observe these rigors, these things that don't even make sense to me that I'm asked to do, like not eating after noon. I'm just going to do it just today." And then tomorrow, can I do it today? He'd ask that in the morning the next day. Can I do it today and the next day? A third thing is we often fail at resolutions, right? This is something we're going to try and resolve to do, but even in failure, a resolution can be helpful. We can work with the disappointment. We can cultivate patience and kindness, and we can also work on how to set better resolutions. Maybe we were being too hard on ourselves. And we can also just say, well, that's where I am at this moment. That is my limit right now. We can come to that self-understanding. I'm going to say one more thing, which is this. There is one pitfall that comes up, I think in everything I read, which is that a resolution can create an identity out of the intention or out of the results, if we're not careful. Just like the identity of being busy or doing important things, right? So how can we work with that? One is to be aware of when it's happening, when we've set a resolve, a personal resolve for ourselves. Maybe it's how we want to show up in the world, and we're finding that we're creating an othering out of it, right? So one solution that came up in these readings is to let the resolution widen into compassion. Let it widen into compassion. And also to note that it's not the self that's doing it. It's the parami. It's the resolve. It's the value of the resolve itself that is yielding benefits. Can keep us from getting too caught up in that identity issue where it's we're doing this thing. Okay, so it's 11:19. Thank you for sitting with us on this differing schedule. And I think instead of breaking into groups on a day like today, we can just open this up. And from now until maybe there's time for a couple of thoughts or questions in this group. Nana, yeah, please unmute yourself.
Thank you very much for your very self-aware reflections, particularly noting the challenges you had with your relationship to work and identity around it. But then particularly the last comment you made about not creating a new delusion out of resolution.
Right.
That said, there's maybe two or three things I want to say very, very quickly. The first is, from a personal standpoint, and I've been married twice, so I have some experience there. And when I left my second marriage, the resolution was to make sure that any delusions, trauma, and conditionings that created as a second time must be looked at and faced. So after a while, one of my resolutions there was to practice. And not that I'm a monastic, or do I aspire to be a monastic, but the third precept. And I've taken that very seriously. And I've resolved that, and it's given me incredible clarity. And to support that point, another thing I've resolved to is to largely, of course, I engage with the third dimensional world, but the resolution is nothing I do should be driven by anything outside. Nothing.
Nothing you do should be driven by.
Driven by anything outside, anything external. But everything I do is an inside game, including the way I look at the world, the way I relate to it, the way I respond to it, the way I respond to the stimuli, how I choose to engage skillfully with the stimuli that's coming. It's a near neighbor to the first example that I gave, but that's just what I wanted to share very quickly. Thank you.
Thank you. I would love a clarification. Could you elaborate on that? Because I'm curious. When you say nothing comes from outside, could you give an example maybe of something that would come from outside or something that helps me understand that a little
Very simple.
bit?
Try to log on, no passcode. This is irritating.
Yeah.
Yet the resolve from inside says, try again, and I get the passcode and I logged on. Therefore, my resolve from within created this opportunity for this sharing to happen.
Oh, and external, just I want to see if I've understood. External would be sort of doing it for some external validation or because others expect it or because you want to be seen a certain way. Is that an idea of the opposite?
Even the things that are external are internal. But I'm driven largely by what's internal to this avatar.
Mm-hmm. I think we have to have a cup of tea at some point and talk more about that. Because I want to hear more about that. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. 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 Yeah, I personally, go ahead. If anyone else, I'll create some space. Yes, who's?
So last week I talked about my resolve to sit with the uncertainty about retirement and all the decisions that I have to make. And what I liked, one of the things you said, I don't remember the exact words, but when the resolve gets shaky, you know, when there I go trying to control what's going to happen and plan and figure it all out, I can just go, oh, right, there's a reason why I set this resolve, because of the dukkha of sitting with uncertainty and how uncomfortable it is, and yet I have a lot to learn from it.
Yeah.
And so just kind of echoing back what you said about, you know, what we can learn from it, and thanks for your good thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, Suze. I really appreciate that example. Of course, it's very relatable to me, given what I said. It's, it really gives us a support in sitting through these the hardest and maybe the most useful parts of our experience. If we can abide in those moments when our resolve is shaken, there's so much learning potential there. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Lyndall. Yeah. Oh, you're muted.
I really appreciated you bringing up the story of Ajahn Suchito, where he talked about not letting our, you know, resolves being, putting ourselves in the repair shop.
Yeah.
You know, because that's really a tendency. I have that tendency too. And what when he said about, you know, when duty fails us, maybe devotion can see us through. And, you know, that's something that I've been trying to work with in resolve this month, is really going from this place of feeling like I'm doing it because I think I should do it, to do it out of a feeling of, because I really want to, out of love for the thing, or really understanding it's good for me. So that's really important learning for me. So thank you for bringing
that. Yeah, thank you. That feels connected to what Nana shared also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I feel a lot of gratitude for having the task of preparing a talk for this and getting to read these things over and over. In fact, like they hit me differently every time, and I feel like it was very valuable to me personally. Okay, well, thank you everyone for sitting. We'll just end with an offering of metta. May our Sangha today be in service of our awakening. And may our Sangha today be in service of all beings awakening.